Well, if you think back a week, last Sunday we spent the day looking at what are known as the Judas narratives. In Matthew's Gospel, you've got three stories that focus on Judas, and those three stories are kind of spread out in Matthew 26 and 27. And we spent last Sunday looking at them, and we saw the contrast between Judas and Jesus. That's why we studied them last Sunday. Matthew paints the picture of what Judas is doing and the horror of what Judas is doing. And do you remember Matthew looks at Zechariah and Jeremiah in the Old Testament to make sense of what Judas is doing? And then Matthew presents you with Christ and how Christ stands in contrast to Judas. Well, what I want to do for the whole day today is think about the relationship you and I have, if we're Christians, the relationship with the law of God. I want to look this morning at Galatians 2 and verse 19. And then tonight, we'll think together about Christian freedom. And we'll do that from Galatians 5. So Galatians 2 then is where we start. If we read the verses there first, and then we'll turn to Exodus. So Galatians 2, first of all, and let's begin at verse 18, and we'll read down as far as verse 21. So Galatians 2 and verse 18. For if I build again those things which I destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. Now that's a constant danger for every Christian, to build again the things that have been destroyed. For I, through the law, die to the law, that I might live to God. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not set aside the grace of God. Now that's a constant danger, as we'll see tonight. We are in danger of setting aside the grace of God. So if I set aside the grace of God, I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness comes through the law, then Christ died in vain. Now, out of those verses then, verse 19. I, through the law, died to the law that I might live to God. What is meant by the law? Let's turn to Exodus and chapter 20. And we'll read there the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments then are known as the law. Not only the Ten Commandments, but mainly, specifically, when Paul talks there about the law, he is referring to the Ten Commandments. So let's turn to Exodus 20, and we'll read these that are very familiar. God spoke to all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself any carved image. Verse 7, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And then verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Verse 12, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, nor your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, or his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. So here's the question then. What's our relationship to that, to those Ten Commandments. That's what I want us to think about today, and we need God's help to do so. So let's pray and ask him for that. Now, you may remember why we're doing this. I think it was the first Sunday, perhaps, or the second Sunday of this new year, we said that as Christians, we are often under pressure. And I try to outline for you the three ways that we are uniquely under pressure. Do you remember them? We are under pressure to be better, better than we are. And that pressure comes from ourselves. That pressure can also come from other Christians. That pressure to be better, better attenders at church, for example, better in relationship to your failures. That pressure can come from non-Christians, when they tell us that they don't think we're very good Christians and we should be better. So there's a pressure to be better. And then I said, should you remember that there's also a pressure on us as Christians that's linked to faith. We should trust more. We should believe more. When things are going badly for us, there's that pressure to have faith and to trust. So there's pressure there. And then finally, there's pressure, do you remember, in relation to evangelism. We ought to be different to those who are not Christians, so that when we have a conversation with a colleague at work who's not a Christian, or we're having a conversation with somebody in the family, there's that pressure to be different to them. Because we think that if we can show difference, then that's going to somehow or other attract people to Christ. So we're under pressure. And I've set myself the task of taking that pressure off and learning instead to live freely. So the first pressure, the pressure to be better, a pressure in relation to sin, that's the pressure that we've looked at so far. And if you take Galatians 2 from verse 18 down, you've got 8 times the pronoun I. I have been, the life I live, I live. And what Paul is doing there, he's building Christian identity. It's only when you know who you are as a Christian that you won't feel this pressure. You have an answer to the pressure, whether it comes from others, whether it comes from non-Christians. If you know who you are as a Christian, you'll be able to resist pressure. So far then, we've taken the statement, I have been crucified with Christ. We've also taken this statement, I have destroyed the old man. Now today, we're going to look at verse 19. I, through the law, have died to the law that I might live to Christ. Now, I want to simply try and explain today what verse 19 means. And I want to do it like this. The law of God, the Ten Commandments that we've just read, is written not just in Exodus. It's not just written in the Bible. It's written in the conscience of every human being. So whether or not a person has ever picked up a Bible, those commandments are impressed on the conscience of every human being. So when you go home and you meet your family, they will know the power of these Ten Commandments. It's in every person, it's in every society. These commandments are the basis for every religion, and they are the basis for all the laws in every land. You can't escape them. And these commandments are God's standard, in which God shows what he expects. And so the first thing to say is every non-Christian will be held by God to these commandments. So let's make it clear, shall I? Your children and your grandchildren are held to these commandments by God. Our brothers and our sisters, our parents and our colleagues, our neighbours, are all held by God to this standard. And every human being will be judged by God by this standard. There is no excuse, and there are no exceptions. These laws allow for no one to be let off the hook. There is no appeal against these standards. The law does not look at anyone and say, you're fine, you're acquitted. This is God's universal measurement against which every human being is held. And I want to impress, if I can, that the knowledge of this law is present in everyone, and everyone breaks it, and everyone is held accountable by God to it. So, in the future, and it's from today's point of view, it's the future, God will call to account everyone to this standard which he holds them to for every moment of life, both inside a person's head and inside a person's heart, and by the life that they have lived. This is unyielding, absolute, unconditional, no debate. This is the standard that God holds people to. And so those we love, if they are outside of Christ, will be examined and measured by this standard when they come before God. However they've lived, whatever they've suffered, whatever they have experienced, whatever talents a person may have, whatever works a person may do, however much good a person has done, this is the standard by which God will hold all men and women from every culture and from every age and every time when they come before him. And of course, the great message of our Bible is this: everyone has failed to measure up. Do you remember Romans 3? All have sinned, and all have fallen short. Fallen short of reaching this standard. Paul says in Romans 3, all have fallen short of the glory of God. And that's what he means. He means this standard which God holds out over the whole of humanity. All have fallen. All have sinned. Do you remember how it goes in Romans? If you do, you may well be warming up to it now. There's none righteous. No, not one righteous. They have all sinned. This is the testimony of Scripture. Now, you may be familiar with this, but I guess from my point of view, I want to do two things. I want to impress upon you as a Christian the power of the law. The fact that the law is in our conscience. Before we were Christians, the law was in our conscience, and it's still in our conscience, and its voice in our conscience can still be heard by us, even though we're Christian people. And I also want you to be very clear, and I'm not apologizing for it, because I think sometimes we need to be made aware. You will be today in the company of those who are going to be judged by this law when they face God, and they will be without excuse and without hope when this law measures them before the presence of God. So this is a universal, uncompromising command that accuses. That's God's law. Secondly, when you read from Exodus 20, did you notice verse 2? I am the Lord your God, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. What we need to see, secondly, is this law was what God expected from the Israelites as a result of saving them from Egypt through the leadership of Moses. So the law was the way in which God expected the Israelites to express their gratitude, thankfulness, to express their appreciation for God's deliverance of them from Egypt. So the whole history in the Old Testament, after Moses, the history of Israel with her leaders and prophets and kings, is a history of one people, the Israelites, being held by God to this standard through which and by means of which they show God they are a response to the fact that he saved them. And if you know your Old Testament and you've heard sermons about Israel, the nation, you will know that again and again and again, the Israelites failed to meet this standard. They failed to express to God their gratitude for saving them. So their history is one of failure. And they would be prophets sent by God to bring them back to this standard. There would be judgments of God upon them for their failure to keep this standard. And then every so often you'd get God hinting to the Israelites that there's another way. There will come a day when a different way will be made available. Not the law this time, with all its demands, with its absolute standards, but there'll be a new way, a different way, through which people can express to God their love and gratitude. So Israel then were kept to this standard, they failed, and ultimately what happened, as you know, is God rejects the nation of Israel, and this new way is found. And it's, of course, through Christ. So that brings you and me then to the Christian's relationship to the law. And I don't know whether we'll really grasp today just how amazing it is. But the message of the gospel is that the Christian, to be a Christian means you have been set free from the law. There is no relationship between the Christian and the law. You're dead to it. The law is dead to you. The law with all its demands, the law with its absolute standards, the law with its judgment and its condemnation, the law with its pointing finger, all of that has gone. And we have been set free from the law. Now that's right at the heart of the message, the gospel that the Apostle Paul was called to preach. That God has done something completely amazing through his Son, Jesus Christ. He has found a way both to set people free from the law, but God has also found a way whereby he can silence the law once and forever. So God doesn't take the law away. The law remains. The law remains as powerful as it's always been. The law remains the standard by which God will judge everyone. So the law is still in place. It's still there. It still condemns the non-Christian. The law is still held out as the standard by which a non-Christian will be judged. So the law is still in place, but God has found a way to silence the law and set free the Christian. And of course, that way is through his Son, Jesus Christ. And so uniquely then, and I wonder whether you get that idea of how unique the Christian message is. It's the only message, not only amongst religions, but it's the only message in the world which tells men and women that they are free from this terrible, awful judgment that God holds over men and women. Because this law is in our conscience, all of us have the idea that we've got to be better, that we've got to do better, that we've got to try harder, that we've got to make an effort. And all religions are built on that idea. So every religion starts with a man or a woman. Every other religion starts with this human being whose conscience condemns them, whose conscience is a reflection of the law and accuses them. So every religion says, do this and you live. So do this, do that, do the other, try harder, work at this, go there, climb those steps, say those prayers, light that candle, do that good work, and that will cause you to be free. That's what every religion says. It's what every philosophy says. It's what every idea says. But only the gospel says you can be free. You can be free from the law. You can be free from your conscience. You can be free from guilt. You can be free from fear. And you can be free in relation to God. And your freedom comes through Jesus Christ. And when you read the book of Acts and you see the early church getting together on a Sunday, what you get is a sense of people coming together to enjoy their freedom. They wouldn't come together to try and do good things and impress God. They would come and rejoice in the fact that of all the people in the world, they were free. They were free to eat with each other. They were free to have relationships with each other. They were free from conscience. They were free from judgment. They were free from condemnation. And it's a great celebration of freedom. And of course, the Apostle Paul is a bit like a watchman. He sets himself up to protect and guard the freedom that Christians are enjoying. And that's why he writes this letter, because he's detected a threat to this freedom. And he's seen it from within the church. And he's seen it even from the example of the Apostle Peter. So we are free. You and I have no law hanging over us. We have no law condemning us. We have no law that is expecting us to do and to complete. There are no demands from the law facing any Christian. The law has had its mouth shut, and the law has had its accusing finger that points at us taken away, and the law has been silenced. So Paul says, I, through the law, died to the law. So the law has got nothing to say to you and me. It's got no power by which it holds us to account, because the law, by its own means, has been silenced. If you were to say to the law, oh no, let's turn that around. If the law was to say, Neil, I want you to do this, then you say back to the law, now look, law, you've got nothing to say to me, and you've got nothing to say to me, and it's your own doing. That's why you've got nothing to say to me. By your own doing, you are silent in relation to me. I, through the law. What happened, of course, and you know this as well as I do, God sent his Son, Jesus Christ. God sent his Son to become man whilst remaining God, so that Christ could do through the law what you and I couldn't. Christ came into the world, and though he was without sin and had no need to himself, he put himself under the law. And so from the very moment of his birth to the very moment when he died, Christ put himself underneath the law with all its demands, the law with everything that the law expected and insisted on. Christ took that burden of the law upon himself. And he kept it. He met every demand that the law made. And he did so for you and for me. So that on our behalf and for our sakes and in our place, he has kept that law utterly and completely and perfectly and fully and freely, and he then gives that obedience to the law to every Christian. And so if the law ever has a conversation with you, you say to the law, it's all been kept. It's all been kept for me. And it's all been kept for me by Christ. So the law's nothing to say to you. It's got no demands it can make of you. It has no power over you. The law does not call you to account. The law does not say to you, keep this and you will live. We are dead. We are free. The law is gone. So the only people in the world who are dead to the law is the Christian. Uniquely amongst the whole of humanity, other religions, other types of Christianity that have moved away from the gospel, they are keeping their people under the law. And that law is symbolized in Galatians by Mount Sinai. So if we'd had time earlier, we could have read chapter 19 of Exodus, and there's the vision of Mount Sinai on fire at the top, covered in dark clouds with flashes of lightning, lightning up the sky, thunder and trumpets and loud voices and terror. That's the law of God. and the people shuddering beneath its awesome weight. That's the law of God. But we are free from it. And we will never, ever know the power of the law of God accusing us or holding us to account. That's your relationship to the law. You don't have one. It's gone. You're free. No more condemnation. That's the message for the Christian. So can I just end by asking you to think about one or two things? We are living free, but what we do, and we'll see more about it tonight, we fall from grace. We fall from this position of freedom, and we are in constant danger of falling from the freedom of grace into which we have been called. Christ died to set us free. And so Paul says, do not be entangled again in that yoke of bondage. Now, we are constantly a bit like brambles that you find when you walk through the countryside. We are being caught again, entrapped again by the yoke of bondage. So we've got to learn as Christians how to maintain our freedom. How can we keep ourselves free? So that's our subject tonight. If we can learn to keep ourselves free, then we won't know this pressure to be better. Even when we sin and fail, which we will, because Paul has just told you, did you notice it in Galatians? The life which I now live in the flesh. You and I are living a life in the flesh. It's a life of struggle. It's a life of weakness. So we are living in the flesh. But we've got to be free flesh. So how do we keep ourselves free? So let me just hint. Some of the problem comes from outside, and some of the problem comes from inside. By outside, I mean there will be people, there will be religious people, there will even be those who say they're Christian people, who envy freedom, who don't want others to be free. There will be elders and preachers and bishops who are so bound themselves, who are so riddled with guilt themselves, who are so enslaved by chains themselves, they are such terrible slaves themselves that they want you to be a slave too. So there's a constant danger of listening to slaves tell you that you should be a slave just like them. Be on the guard for those, because they're not just Roman Catholic. They're not just Muslim. They can tell you that they're Christian. Be on your guard, because they've never set themselves free. And so they're envious of the freedom of others. So there's that threat. But there's also threats that come from us, because we can remember being slaves ourselves. We can remember the fear that is part of being a slave. And we can remember the guilt of slavery. We can even remember that when we were once slaves, we tried to please our masters. And our master was cruel. And he had a harsh and strong voice. And our master had a terrible whip that he would use to beat us every time we got something wrong. So we can remember those days when we lived as fear-driven slaves seeking to please our master. And we never could please him, that Mr. Law, that we were once slaves of. We can remember it. So now, when we get something wrong, we still expect our old master law to take his whip of the commandments and whack us around the head. We still expect it. So we still live like the old slaves we used to be. And we try to please him. And when we are going well and we're doing our jobs nicely, then we think he's pleased with us, old Master Law. But when we get it wrong, the first thing we do is we cower, expecting a whack around the heads. Because that's what we used to have. We still have that old slave mind. And so many of you will know that the New Testament calls you to renew your mind, to be transformed by the renewing of your mind, not to live as slaves, your sons, not slaves. Through Christ, you have been adopted. The law has been silenced. You're now children of a heavenly Father. He's Abba Father. You are no longer to live like slaves. Your sons, your heirs of God, your joint heirs with Christ. You have an inheritance laid up for you in heaven, which cannot be destroyed, which is incorruptible, undefiled, and does not fade away. You have the Spirit of God in your hearts, by which you cry, Abba, Father. You have freedom, so you need to renew your minds. And it's from a new mind that you will then know how to live before this God who is now your Father. You don't need the commands to tell you how to live. You live from your new mind. You live from your new heart. You live from grace. You live from love. This is how you live. As a son and not a slave. So there are dangers from outside, there are dangers from inside. But the great message is stand fast in the freedom by which Christ has made us free. Well, let's pray.